Hello and welcome to the Culture File Weekly with me, Luke Clancy, and a kind of mid-June collection of voices running from Caroline Shaw singing ABBA to Jennifer Walsh on the relationship between AI and EVP, the progressive politics of witches in Ritual, a live performance installation from Junk Ensemble in Cork, and Aisling Kelleher on what the movies have led us to expect from Apple's Vision Pro headset. But we begin in a very nice position. In a sweet spot between Bach and ABBA might be one way to place the music of Caroline Shaw, and as we'll hear in a moment, the Pulitzer Prize and Grammy-winning composer, violinist and vocalist with her group Roomful of Teeth wouldn't have too much objection to the description. Shaw's music mixes old-school melodic pleasure with restless, sometimes plain hilarious invention, which is one reason her sound is beloved of TV music directors who've co-opted its ability to sound frothy and devastating at the same time to soundtrack the acting of, say, a Jesse Eisenberg in Fleischman is in Trouble or a Sean Bean in Marriage. Caroline Shaw is in Ireland this weekend for Louth Contemporary Music Society's Folks Music Festival, ahead of which she riversided with Culture File. I've just discovered you on TikTok. You gave it a little go in the middle of the pandemic, did you?
I did. I was like, what's this? It's deleted from my phone. I couldn't do it anymore.
But there is something quite beautiful there, which is that you decided to do a duet with somebody. Did you know that person? Or it's like somebody in TikTok, you can make a duet video and if you're lucky, Caroline Shaw will drop in and do the harmonies for you.
Oh, well, that was ironically, that person is sitting about 6 feet away from me right now. So we barely knew each other before, but we had met. She was just in the pandemic wanting to sing with people, and you couldn't sing with people. And she was like, oh, I want to sing duets on TikTok. And I said, oh, how do you, I messaged like, how do you do that? And so I just decided to sing the song with her, and then we later fell in love. So that is the only thing I've ever done on TikTok.
That is a TikTok romance, then.
It really
is. It exists. That's Danny Lee.
Mm-hmm. Danny Lee. Yeah. Beautiful songs.
I was also in there. Mm-hmm. You did a little version of mm-hmm. another thing that you do that I love, which is the version of Lay All Your Love on Me. And I was thinking, is that where it started? It's like you've got your violin mm-hmm. and you're using it like it's a ukulele, kind of.
I sort of did that a few weeks before this record with So Percussion called Let the Soil Play a Simple Part. On the record, it's a duet with layered marimbas, and I wanted to make something that I could do on my fire escape. Don't go wasting your emotion.
What you do there is we can watch you kind of dealing with the rests in it, which are kind of like such a huge part of the way you interpret that. And there's one big long rest where you kind of look up at the camera and go, yep, I'm just going to sit here in this little space for a while.
Yeah, we wanted to do something. I said, what if you took just the chorus from ABBA's Lay All Your Love on Me, and it's just that, and it's slowed down, and you actually have to feel every single beat. It's important. It's sort of, that's where all the tragedy of the song exists, in those rests.
It's really beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
I do feel guilty talking to you about ABBA's composition, but I think it sort of does feel like a piece of your own music when you sit and listen to it, and the experience of it feels a little bit like that. Lay all your love
on me. Oh, I'm really glad to hear that. I people say, what do you listen to, when you're not writing music? Because I mostly am in silence. I can't listen to a lot of music because I'm writing a lot. But when I do, it's either Bach, Well-Tempered Clavier, or it's ABBA Gold. So I love their harmonies and the just like the fun of it, but also the like beautiful production and like great melodies. It's so natural, and there's such like hit after hit.
And ABBA are pretty good too. You bring the two together there, which is kind of magical.
It's the two things that I love together. Oh, probably sung in choirs growing up in an Episcopal church in the U.S. and was always kind of a good choral singer and the proper second alto who sings all the right notes and blends well. And then I later joined. I was a violinist and kind of intended to play in a string quartet. And later on, joined Roomful of Teeth, which is an 8-voice ensemble, right when it was just a workshop and just beginning. And that ensemble really kind of opened my voice and my ears up to different ways of singing, and I became more confident. And only in the last few years have I started to sing solo. But I do kind of use my voice a lot when I'm writing. What a song. Even if I'm writing something orchestral, imagining, you know, what the clarinet or the trumpet line feels like in the voice. And there's so many of these instruments that originally came from accompanying singers. So it's a big tool in writing, but it's something that I am very lucky to get to do in life. Just the same. I love going to concerts where you're sitting, you know, you might be sitting 50 or 100 feet away, but there's something really exciting about hearing that sound right next to your ear. And with So Percussion, we really made that album in the studio, so very little of it is written down. It wasn't through composed, it was built more like a band. So, you know, the way that Beatles went into the studio and say, hey, here are some fragments of songs, let's build them together and see what, use the studio as a tool. And now I'm working on a project with Danny Lee, and the band is called Ringdown, where we're building everything basically in the studio. We've gone into the studio to record, things aren't written down, and really enjoying getting the proper sound of the bass or the sound of the synth or the right kind of reverb, and thinking back to just older ways of recording. This record with Roomful of Teeth, Rough Magic, Bill Britell, who wrote one of the big pieces on the record called Psychedelics. Is really interested in this idea of kind of virtual reality and alternative realities for the voice and identity. And he's used, like, truly, truly used the studio as a tool, and placing the voices and tuning them and making them sometimes feel artificial and sometimes very, very human. That's something that I'm really excited about in music when I hear it, when I hear musicians, whether they're players or singers, whatever the instrument, they're taking something and making it their own. And you know that there are five different ways that they would feel comfortable doing it. So I try to write music that allows for, I always say, like, allows people to, has the space to walk around and be yourself in it. The way that I think a good play is written, you don't read it one way. There's no one single production.
Caroline Shaw there, and she'll be performing with the Esposito Quartet on Saturday, 17th of June, 5 p.m. at the Spirit Store, Dundalk. But events begin in Dundalk on Friday night with Chamber Choir Ireland, conducted by Paul Hillier, featuring Caroline Shaw at St. Nicholas Church at 8 p.m. The heretic, the healer, the disobedient wife, the woman who dared to live alone, the Obeah woman who poisoned the master's food and inspired the slaves to revolt. That's how the feminist writer Silvia Federici saw witches. The persecution of these women then was an obvious move in capitalism and patriarchy protecting itself, even if it destroyed knowledge and a valuable way of understanding the world. The idea of witches troubling the world is the starting point for Ritual, a live performance instrument from Dance Innovators' Junk Ensemble, which is being staged as part of this year's Cork Midsummer Festival. Created in collaboration with visual artists Jesse Jones and Aideen Barry, and featuring music artist Planning to Rock and composer Irene Butley, Ritual leads the audience promenade style through the Marina Market Warehouse in Cork's Docklands, inviting them to experience a collision of artists' responses, interrogations, and a radical celebration of the witch as a symbol of dissidence. Rachel Andrews visited Marina Market to talk about magic and resistance.
It's like women in numbers creating a racket, but doing it for a very regenerative way. Mm. So we're cracking the floor open, we're unearthing it in order for new things to grow, in order for regeneration to occur. I'm Megan Kennedy, co-artistic director of Junk Ensemble. Witch Hunts has taken some of our research time, but essentially we've been looking at women coming together and creating a disturbance and a trouble in a positive manner. So moving away from the negative connotations of witches, which, as we all know, has gone far into many centuries ago, and really trying to figure out why that first began, looking at the idea of capitalism coming into the system and moving away from matriarchal system and moving into patriarchal household, and how women became this subversive force within the matriarchal household, and how then that turned against them.
I'm Jessica Kennedy, co-artistic director of Junk Ensemble and dance artist and choreographer. Objects and materials have been a big meeting point for all of our conversations, and the components for spells tend to be accessible, inexpensive and discreet, almost domestic. So the materials that we've connected on are string and twine, white chalk, hair, earth, soils, pins, and of course fire, water. Mm. So these materials have connected all of our works with the dance and the work that we're doing with the dancers as props. They're moving through chalk, they're using twine, also into the projection, into the Jessie's sculpture, which is sort of the piece de resistance near the end of the piece. This is the piece that deserves the collaboration with all these different artists, and the theme and concept requires more people's opinions and ideas and imaginations with it.
Of course, it's challenging because there's a number of designers in place, essentially. We're working with a design team as well as visual designers, visual artists and music artists, and everyone's response is incredibly valid. So, of course, it's giving that time to everyone. However, the collaborators we're working with really understand that and honour that, and honour that it is a piece that we need to thread together as a cohesive whole.
My name is Aideen Barry and I'm a visual artist.
It's kind of a complex plot. So like out of the conversations, there was like this Dropbox folder of shared imagery. Some of the imagery was around, you know, like these chalk drawings that would be made as kind of like totems or totems. And I thought this was kind of interesting. We could animate one of these chalk drawings. Also in speaking with Jessie and her research into like the oracles of Delphi, when I heard that there was this understanding that the oracles, when they stamped their feet, these vapors would come up and it would cause them to have these hallucinations. So I created this landscape that the dancers, as they dance on it with the domestic materials that Jessica is talking about, like flour or ash or salt, it causes these vapors to come up. So it's kind of this illustrative kind of moment, but it's all rooted in kind of conceptual rigor. CGI, this computer-generated imagery, this is the witchcraft of today. Like we are kind of a bit nervous about this kind of technology because it's all subsumed into AI and the threats that that poses to us. So in a way, it's kind of another comment about the invisibility or witchcraft within the digital witch.
We had been shown the space and really liked that it was on the docks, and there's this whole sort of industrial labour with lots of like ropes and pipes and concrete, and then also heavy brass and copper, and all of these sort of quite like labour instruments were part of this setup. So then we started building the design around that. So it's sort of this contrast between this quite, you know, male materials, and then there's a softness and a real sort of beauty and kind of sheerness to some of the other designs.
It is this kind of industrial labour space, you know, that you are going to enter, but it's going to have all of these kind of hawkbacks to like experiencing one of these almost religious journeys or pilgrimages through the work.
There seems to be a return to the patriarchal household right now. So I think more than ever, there's an urgency in it. There's a drive, there's a necessity for this work and other works and all the collaborations and the discussions to carry on. This isn't the time to rest at all. This is the time to pick up our instruments and start making a racket. We're not going away. We're here and we're colluding, we're collaborating, and we make a difference.
The team behind Junk Ensemble's Ritual there, and the reporter was Rachel Andrews. Ritual runs to the 17th of June in the Marina Market Warehouse each night at 8:30 as part of Cork Midsummer Festival. And we're doing what we can't help doing next on Culturefile with another way of thinking about AI with our Another Way of Thinking correspondent. This is Jennifer Walsh's Things Know Things.
The last few editions of Things Know Things have looked at AI from a wide variety of different perspectives. Last time, I spoke about how thinking through the sci-fi, mythic aspects of AI is important, so that we can stop ascribing agency to the technology. This time, I'd like to approach AI from a more esoteric angle, as a form of electronic voice phenomena. Electronic voice phenomena, EVP for short, are a class of recorded sounds which are believed to be voices of the dead or spirits from another dimension. EVP recordings are not made live. The EVP devotee, hoping to capture a message from the other side, sets up an audio recorder in a silent room and records the silence for a short period, then presses rewind. If they are lucky, when they play the recording back, voices reveal themselves, emerging from the static in garbled fragments. In pure sonic terms, the experience is almost identical to listening to early outputs from a machine learning network training on a person's voice. In both cases, the sounds contain a lot of static, and considerable work is required on the part of the listener to hear these sounds as sentient. But we're human. We want to believe. For many artists, the prospect of using AI to coax a ghost into the machine is deeply compelling. The ghost can be many things: machine consciousness, divine inspiration, an unspecified supernatural presence, the fairies who live in the internet. This approach is conceptually rich, rooted in a long artistic tradition which links the Holy Spirit in the form of a dove singing plain chant into Pope Gregory's ear to Robert Johnson selling his soul to the devil. It can at times risk romanticising AI, but it can also be a very useful way to think through the idiosyncrasies, the sheer unknowability of AI. In 2022, artist Steph Madge Swanson, aka Supercomposite, began noticing a female figure she refers to as a Loeb, recurring across images she produced using the generative platform Midjourney. The images look like stills from a horror film. They're explicit, violent, and filled with gore. Midjourney's guardrails are supposed to prevent the network producing images like this, and they certainly were not what Swanson wanted. Loeb was invoked unintentionally by Swanson experimenting with negatively weighted prompts and combining the results with other images. Swanson's Twitter thread about Loeb is a compelling ghost story of a woman who, quote, haunts every image she touches, unquote. But more importantly, it's a tale of the unexpected from a technical perspective, driving home just how little we know about how these networks function, how little control we have over the actions they may take, and how utterly enchanted we humans are by the idea that we can make contact with something beyond the human in them. We all know that tales of the Loch Ness Monster and the abominable snowman have persisted in culture for centuries. And it leaves me wondering, what mythical creatures will come to haunt the hidden lairs of the networks?
Jennifer Walsh there, and the recent set of messages Jennifer has been creating, offering various approaches to thinking about AI, from AI is an energy drink to the classic AI is AI, are available now on the Lyrics site and via the Culturefile podcast feed. Movies exploring VR like Minority Report or The Final Cut ran effective pre-publicity for Apple's recent product announcement, Vision Pro, a headset that lets us put our faces into spaces generated by computer. Hollywood has primed us so thoroughly on what to expect and what to worry about that it's a big ask for the Vision Pro promo video to leave its mark on this cinematech of dystopian data spaces. But it had a go. Culturefile watched with our tech soothsayer Professor Aislinn Kelleher to assess the teaser to end all teasers. So Apple have released this thing, but they haven't. They've only released word of this thing, Aislinn. What is this thing?
The thing has been announced, and then we have 7 months or so to kind of come to terms with the fact that the thing costs $3,500. That's what you have to kind of think about.
Feels a bit like a pregnancy, like they've waited a couple of months to announce it, and now, like, with 7 months to go, they're telling us, yep, it's going to be a spatial computing headset.
I'm not sure if the analogy works.
Thank you.
Of the child. I kind of know maybe what to do with a baby, but and I'll probably realize it's a lifetime commitment. Not so sure with this that I'm going to be like, well, this is a 24/7 thing for me now. Yes, they're very interested in owning this new space that's about spatial computing, about being in your physical space and in your digital space simultaneously. Not quite talking about it as a virtual reality or even an augmented reality piece of technology, but really it's a way to bring your screens, all your screens, into your physical space. But it's a very technically dazzling, or as the video says, jaw-dropping. Apple never undersell.
They use this new term, spatial computing, and say that they have a spatial operating system. And as you point out, they also avoid things like saying virtual reality or VR or AR. They want to really claim that this is a new area that they're staking out for themselves, and certainly not anything like Mark Zuckerberg's metaverse or any of the existing VR platforms that we might know. How new is what they're promising?
It's both new and it's both completely not new. I mean, really what you're doing is strapping a computer to your face, right? So that's what we're doing. And now I can, you know, sign my PDFs, right, with wearing my goggles as opposed to sitting at my computer. The idea here, and one of the things that they're really trying to work on, is the legibility, for example, of text in this virtual space. And that's always been a little bit challenging, particularly with documents or spreadsheets or anything like that. And I think the heaps of engineering technology that they've thrown at this enables them to place documents in three-dimensional spaces, which you can imagine would be kind of useful if you're doing a lot of data analysis or anything like that, or if you're like me and you have 250 tabs open, to be able to sort them in a different way could allow for a different level of efficiency at work, is one way of thinking about this three-dimensional spacing of the documents on your computer.
Actually, you don't see your eyes. You see what they've created, a kind of avatar of your eyes becomes...
Oh, don't say avatar. They don't want you to say avatar.
Okay, so yes. What are they calling it?
It's a persona.
A persona.
Yeah.
So other people are seeing a persona, which is a digital rendering of your eyes, and that becomes you, that people who are standing in the room while you're wearing this device talk to.
Yeah, and that's totally natural, right? My persona. I mean, I think this is definitely one area where they're going to need to do a little bit of work on that, because some of the renderings where they're showing a person wearing the headset doing FaceTime with two other people who are, it seems in the video anyway, that they're not wearing the headsets. But then they do show you as well what you would look like if you were rendered, you know, to other people to see it. And it's a kind of an uncanny valley mimicry of you. And I understand why they don't want to call it an avatar. They're trying to say it is you, isn't it? And you're like,
no, it's not me.
One of the features that they advertise that it will take these sort of 3D memory videos, which the uptake of it is kind of a frightening idea that we would sort of swallow a lot of these things, but it will take a 3D memory video that you will experience in the first place and then replay in exactly the same fashion. So there will be no difference between you watching the memory and having the memory. And that seems to open up a big area of problems.
Yeah, because it's very, again, Minority Report, you know, where the Tom Cruise character is looking back over, you know, his...
Everything's Minority Report to
you. It is. It's just, you know, that's it. It begins and starts there. And even in the video, there's something almost sad about it. You're like, why is this man alone? Are they his children? Are they alive? So, oh, it reminds me as well of the movie The Final Cut. Robin Williams is in that, and it has this idea that you... In utero, you get a chip embedded in your brain and records everything. And then there's people who are called the cutters who edit it all together. So they get to look at all the footage. And it was both melancholic and also kind of really beautiful to look at life's worth of memories of like all the things you say, like you've eaten, and then select what is significant. And how does the machine help you do that?
The fact that the brand is Apple here is the thing that's helping it along. Because as you say, there have been lots of companies, and say Leap, I think, was one of them,
right,
who kind of were operating in this area and basically have flopped. But maybe they don't have the kind of built-in constituency that an Apple product has, which might be the thing to finally get this over the line and make this spatial technology commonplace.
This is maybe what they're hoping for, is that because it fits with the Apple ecosystem already, so I can imagine down the line that as this gets a little bit cheaper, it could be a really useful way to see your information and manipulate it in a way that also supports like memory and cognition, because we remember where things are spatially. Right now, the computer is a little dense in terms of, you're like, well, where exactly is it? Like, it's in these folders. That's the analogy that we still have, as opposed to how we think of memory palaces in general as a technique that you can use to memorize really large amounts of data, is to visualize it in a house and move through the house and find it there. It could be kind of intriguing in that domain. I mean, it's like all these things. You just look stupid wearing them.
But you're on your own, so.
You're on your own, yeah. So that's what I'm like. And they have solved the problem. Like, I hate the VR ones. I'm like, if I'm on my own and somebody comes into my house to murder me, at least if I have the other one, at least I could see through my goggles I'm about to be murdered. And I could film my own murder. Actually, that's a part of the final cut, that's one of the things. This guy witnesses a murder. And then they want to get the chip.
My seminal VR film is Brainstorm. Do you know that?
I don't know that, sir. Is it good or bad?
I haven't seen it in many years, but I did watch it a few times. It's got Natalie Wood in it.
Oh.
And it's about a total experience VR headset.
Okay.
And so it works through all the corruptions of what you might do, like somebody starts using it for porn.
Straight away.
And it becomes the David Foster Wallace device. You know, he's found dead with this kind of constant humping in his, playing through his brain and whatever.
Oh, goodness.
And then they try and, well, I won't give you away the ending, but yeah, it's worth a look.
Okay.
It is to Professor Aisling Kelleher there of USC School of Cinematic Arts, talking to us from Los Angeles. And that brings to a close this edition of the Culture File Weekly. We'll be back with more proprietary personas next Saturday tea time. Till then, bye now.